Welcome to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. Six-time national champion bodybuilder, one-on-one peak performance coaching specialist, Mass Machine Nutrition Supplement Company owner, and speaker, Skip LaCour offers his expert advice on training, nutrition, and motivation that will help you take your efforts to the next level. He also interviews the most interesting and passionate people in the bodybuilding and fitness world so you can learn from their knowledge and success too.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this bodybuilding and fitness podcast. I am Skip LaCour, and in this special series of bodybuilding and fitness podcast, I am bringing to you the most passionate and the most interesting people in bodybuilding and fitness. And I have a special series of podcasts within the special series of podcasts where I'm bringing you the true legends of bodybuilding. And today, I have a returning guest, a very special guest, very articulate, passionate, someone we can learn a lot from. I know I've been learning from him for years. Hall of Fame, IFBB professional bodybuilder and true bodybuilding legend, Mr. Sean Ray. How are you today, Sean?
I'm good, man. But when you use the word legend, I think of guys like, you know, the founding fathers, the Frank Zanes and the Arnolds and the Larry Scotts and the Sergio Oliva, but I guess if you live long enough, you ultimately, you have an impact on people that come up behind you and also the guys that were doing it, you know, while I was doing it.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, those are your legends, but I'll tell you, when you were hitting your stride in the 90s and doing your thing, you know, there's kids 14, 15 that, you know, Arnold and those guys were too old. You know, those guys were in the history books and they were living and breathing with you, watching you on stage. And, you know, although I was older, I was one of those guys. When I was into it, you were in your prime, in the magazines. I mean, you are bodybuilding to me when I fell in love with it. And I know there's a lot of people my age and younger who just see you as a legend.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. You know, in hindsight, when you mentioned the 90s, I mean, comparable to all the eras, I just, you know, the longer you live, the more things come into focus. They say hindsight's 20/20.
Right, right.
And I look at the competition in the 60s and throughout the 70s, throughout the 80s and 90s and into the new millennium. I got to tell you, we probably produced more Hall of Fame bodybuilders in the 90s, and the level of competition and the depth and the challenge and you know, the genetics of the guys in the 90s is still unparalleled to this day. And I was honored and blessed to be a part of that.
It was a really special time, and I had a podcast with another legend who will be appearing with you, Flex Wheeler, at the Legends Seminar. Sean Ray Production, by the way, with Sean Ray, Flex Wheeler, 8-time Mr. Olympia, Lee Haney, Rich Gaspari, the real deal, Chris Cormier, and Mike Christian, and I'll be there to help out. And, I was talking to Flex, and you know, he's a humble guy. He just did his thing. But even Flex, when, you know, he said when he stepped back and got some distance from his accomplishments, it was a really special time, those 90s. And I think it was how it was positioned, too, because it was the last bit where the very, very special bodybuilders like yourself, like Flex, and everybody in that era, you had to win your pro car like with one show. It didn't open up so much. And it was right before the emergence of the internet. So, man, we raced to the grocery stores to look at those magazines. We had to wait 3 months to see the results of the show. So it was so much more coveted, everything that you did and accomplished. All you guys were down in Gold's Venice, and even the amateurs were stars all around the world. It was a very, very special time.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, I think the same thing applies even in the football and the NBA and even in the world of boxing. When I look at boxing, you know, Mike Tyson's right around my age, Flex's age, Kevin Levrone's age. And when he was killing people in the boxing room, we all kind of drew strength from that. We all thought we were going to be like the Mike Tyson of bodybuilding. But, you know, in the era of Roberto Duran and Sugar Ray Leonard and Tommy Hearns, I mean, boxing had the same depth that bodybuilding had in the 90s. I mean, the 80s were good. You know, Lee Haney won the 84 Mr. Olympia when I started, you know, when I graduated high school and really caught fire in bodybuilding. But even Haney only had like one or two guys comparable. I mean, Gary Stridham, when he turned pro, winning the Nationals in 86, was like really the first guy that can stand shoulder to shoulder and head to head with Lee Haney. And then you had Mike Christian, but who was a little bit lighter in the leg department and the calf department.
Right.
Barry DeMay, who had one little tiny sniff back in 1988 before he tore his pec in 89. And then, you had Dorian Yates come in 1991 and stand next to Haney. There weren't a whole lot of guys that were thrown at Haney with the quality. But in the 90s, you had this, domination of Dorian Yates, but we had myself and Vince Taylor and Flex Wheeler and Lee, Labrada. We had all these other different looks that were being thrown at the champion and Dorian. And I'm not so sure that Dorian was, as dominant in the 90s as Lee Haney was from the 80s to 91, because, Haney didn't have anyone to stand next to, but Dorian had all these different looks that were thrown at him, and they were all
right.
A perfect option to what Dorian presented. I mean, on any given day, Flex Wheeler could have beat Dorian, and no one would have said anything. I could have beat Dorian. I mean, Kevin could have beat Dorian. It didn't happen, but I think we had more challenges in the 90s than there were thrown at the champions in the 80s.
You said something very interesting that I think really made bodybuilding a fan sport at the time. You talked about all the different looks where, in Lee Haney's age, I mean, he pretty much stood out, like you said. In the 90s, there were so many great bodybuilders that all had different looks that we as fans, the fans, could all say, well, yeah, Dorian's awesome, but I like Sean. I like Flex.
Sure.
Everybody got to pick. So it was a very special time for the fans and who they can relate to. Because you were all champions in their eyes because there were so many different amazing looks. There was only one Mr. Olympia or so in that time, but everybody had their raving fan base followers. And like I said, it was a very special time. It was a special time because of the personalities in the mix, too. I mean, you guys were friends. You lived in close proximity, a group of you. The magazines followed it. You traveled around together. Talk about that.
Well, let me preface this by saying that in the 90s, I mean, if you lined up 10 Olympians, there was not a whole lot of disparity in terms of the fan wanting to be close to all 10 of those guys. Even though there was only one Mr. Olympia, the line for Mr. Olympia was equal to the line of Nasrel Sambati and equal to the line to get the autograph of Vince Taylor, Ray, and Flex Wheeler. I mean, you had an equality there that the fans appreciated all of us. And now you go to the Mr. Olympia and there's like two, maybe three huge lines that just wrap around the building. And the other Olympians are like pace cars on the racetrack. They're just kind of sitting there. And there's a couple of people that may be talking to them, but largely ignored. I mean, the fans polarize themselves straight to the champion or the top of the top. And they don't really pay homage to the guys that actually had to qualify to get to the Olympia. Back when I was competing, being in the Olympia was revered. I mean, even Gunther Schlierkamp, who was like 10th place at the Olympia, was widely popular through the magazines, through his look, through his persona. And, I think the fans really gave everyone a lot of equality in terms of their appreciation. Now, the internet, you have guys that hardly do anything. And, a guy that's never been on a bodybuilding stage has a longer line than Mr. Olympia.
Right, right.
He's got four titles. So I think social media is, the death of celebrity of the bodybuilder. And the internet probably killed a lot of the anticipation of the arrival of an Olympian.
Right.
Because, you can put a selfie up there. You can control what your image looks like. You can kind of, people can live vicariously through you on a daily basis, whereas in the 90s, you had to wait for the magazine to find out what happened last month, who's talking crap on who, who's training with whom, what so-and-so looks like. So that is gone. It's a golden era. I mean, I think kind of like back when people long for the days of Elvis Presley, when rock and roll first hit, grandparents and elder people, they can appreciate, the 50s type music. Now anybody can go in their little studio upstairs and break out their computer and make a record,
Right, right. I'll tell you,
we long for time. We as I get older, we long for those days of, seeing real champions. And right now, I think we have one or two champions that dominate the sport. By the way, Joe Weider was the maestro. Joe Weider was alive. He had his fingerprints on all of us. We weren't self-created. Joe helped all of us, and that's
okay.
Gone.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, is that I have a different spin on the same thing. I mean, there's two different factors that make a champion a popular champion. Obviously, one is the physique. It's a physique contest, right?
Right.
But but the other thing about it, and I think this is where the internet stars come in, who have never even been in a bodybuilding stage, is the personality factor. I mean, the days are gone when you can just sit back and let your body even do part of the talking. I mean, they were kind of gone before, but they were long gone. And I really think it's a credit to all you guys in the 90s because you guys all had YouTube personalities without YouTube. It just right. all, you know, all appeared in one spot. I get all of you guys could have held your own in this time because of your personalities anyway.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And you know what? We can... We will always, the older we get, we always look back. I'm not really nostalgic, but when I go to a bodybuilding show today, and I'm a fan first, that's why I got into sport.
Uh-huh.
I get bored easily. You know, I went to the Europa over the weekend, and there's only one Olympian that was trying to get back to the Olympia. It just seems like the bodybuilders today don't hold the Mr. Olympia weekend, what it represents, in such high regard. I mean, we went to Dallas. Branch Warren's hometown, Johnny Jackson's hometown, Steve Kuklo's hometown. None of those three bodybuilders are even trying to get to the Olympia through that vehicle, which was created. I mean, you don't have to get on a plane. You don't have to travel. It just seemed like back in the 90s, so many more people revered the Mr. Olympia. They would do whatever they can do to get qualified and to go back. And now, I don't know if it's a matter of like trying to preserve your health or prolong your career. Mr. Olympia doesn't seem like it's the end game for many pro bodybuilders when they have sponsors
right.
that literally pay them to stay home.
Well, and also with all that opportunity on the internet, right? I mean, and I was talking with Rich Gasperi on our last Legends podcast, and he talked about, you know, how he, you know, coaches, gives Branch Warren advice on to really market himself and take care of it financially. And if you do such a great job, you maximize the internet. I know Rich, just like you, Rich is really active on the internet. He teaches Branch to do that. There's less of that sense of urgency to actually even get to the Olympia. Do you think that might be part of it?
If you can stay at home and make money, by all means.
Yeah, yeah.
Masquerading as a pro bodybuilder that wants to be the best in the world by staying home is not my idea of trying to be the best in the world. I mean, look, Cedric McMillan had an opportunity. He was second at the Arnold Classic in Columbus, Ohio, and he skips the following weekend to have a rubber match against Dexter out in Australia. And then he has an opportunity in New York. He has an opportunity in freaking Toronto. He had opportunity. He chooses not to. I can't get in the minds of these athletes. They have other priorities and family and work and whatever.
Right.
But I'm a bodybuilder through and through. I mean, getting qualified for the Mr. Olympia is at the top of my list. But for many, it's not the most important thing. And it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you, that's what makes you a champion. But you're more than just a bodybuilding champion. I'm glad you made that clear that you're a bodybuilding champion. You focus on your physique first and foremost because you've really excelled in other areas. And really, that's what I want the focus of this podcast to be about. On my bodybuilding and fitness podcast interview, number 328, you can find that at skiplacour.com. I sat down with Sean and we talked about his career. We talked more about the 90s, about his life, what made him who he is today. So we just did that a few months ago, so it's really current. So check that out. I'll link it on the bottom of this podcast. Again, that's podcast number 328. This podcast, I thought it would be – it's something I've always admired about Sean. I mean, those of you who are in my tribe who are listening to this podcast because of me and, you know, I'm bringing some of these legends and bodybuilding stars to you, well, you know, I, in addition to my body and everything like that, I mean, I want to do my passion. I want to do what I love to do. I want to put some nickels together and live the life that I want. I quit the grocery store to chase a dream. Well, you know, Sean was someone who I did whatever I could to get in his company because I saw that business mindset. He had that business acumen, and I would volunteer to, like, do his first website back in 1997. I would do whatever to learn from him. Actually, he impressed me so much, and he was so different than the other bodybuilders. And the beat goes on. The beat is still going on to this day. And so I talked to Sean about this podcast, sharing some of that hustler mentality, that business mentality to you. Because, you know, if you are a bodybuilder or you want to be a bodybuilder, you know, being able to lead with your body but also become a business person can make your life really wonderful, you know, if you could put it all together, like Sean has since he was a teenager, all the way where he is now. And he gets to pass it along to his kids, you know, they're taking that same mentality. So there's a lot we can learn. And also, if you just have a passion, it could be for fitness if that's what you do very well and you have your own tribe, even if you've never been a pro bodybuilder. Hell, if you're just some type of expert and you have your tribe of people who want to be like you, I think that you can learn a lot of things from Sean. So that's what I want to focus on this podcast. Sean, is that all right with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with IFBB Hall of Fame bodybuilder Sean Ray.
You're listening to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast.
This is IFBB Hall of Fame professional bodybuilder Sean Ray. Join me and some of the other legends of the sport of bodybuilding, like 8-time Mr. Olympia Lee Haney, Hall of Famer Rich Kaspari and Flex Wheeler, along with Chris Cormier, Mike Christian, and Skip LaCour at the Legends Seminar Saturday and Sunday, June 27th and 28th in Santa Clara, California at the San Jose Championships. Get up close and personal with these amazing champions and find out what made them great during their competitive days and what's driving them now as we continue to find out what they eat and what are they doing today. For more information about this Sean Ray production, make sure you go to legendseminar.com.
We are back with IFBB professional bodybuilder and legend, Mr. Sean Ray. You can check Sean out at his bodybuilding website where he's representing Shreds at sugarseanray.com. And he's got a new line that he's really introducing to the whole bodybuilding and fitness community, really feeling a need there at seanrayskincare.com. We'll make sure we talk to him about that. So, Sean, I was talking about your business acumen, how you were able to enhance what you accomplish on stage by really giving back and really making it into a business. Tell me that mentality and tell me how it's different than maybe some of the other bodybuilders who influenced that. And what do you see these days when it comes to that?
Yeah, I mean, it all stems from the word passion. I started in bodybuilding because I was a fan. I mean, I know what it's like to stand in line for those autographs, to watch a bodybuilder training from a distance and admire and respect and fantasize that might be me one day, to, you know, pick up a magazine on a newsstand and visualize yourself being in it and ultimately on the cover. All of those things that come with being a physique celebrity, physique star, a bodybuilding icon, that hit me when I was a teenager. I mean, some people know what they want to be when they're very young, and they get there because of that focus and because of that passion. I mean, Mike Tyson, youngest heavyweight champion, 1986, you know, at 20 years old, because he was doing it when he was 15 years old, you know, and he got it. He became a student of the game. I became a student of the game. I learned who Larry Scott was, the first Mr. Olympia, the myth, you know, Sergio Oliva, where'd he come from? Cuba. You know, Franco Colombo, the Sardinian from Italy, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, the Austrian Oak from Australia, Austria at 19 years old. You know, I read the books. I became a student. I bought all the videos, and then to live the life, walking into Gold's Gym and World's Gym and seeing these iconic figures made me even more hungry. It made my vision even more focused. So when I went to the gym on my own, I was visualizing myself as those legends, as those icons. I trained on a different plane than the guys that were, you know, training for Friday night to pump up their arms and their chest. I knew I needed delts. I knew I was a black guy doesn't have good calves. I mean, there were very few examples. So I killed my calves at the beginning of every workout. I idolized Chris Dickerson because he did have calves. I mean, I was one of those guys that knew who the people were. I mean, Chris Dickerson was a survivor. He was a triplet. He was an opera singer. He was the oldest black Mr. America for his time. I mean, he became the oldest Mr. Olympia in 1982, 43 years old. I paid attention to detail. I knew who Joe and Ben were and why they started bodybuilding and giving us these opportunities. And Arnold's, situation coming over and being taken under the wing and being the golden child of the Weider family, I wanted to be that guy. So you can imagine what I felt like at 20, winning the IFBB World Junior World Championships in Australia, coming home, and Joe Weider puts me on the cover of his magazine, Flex Magazine, at 20 years old. And then I go back to my college, and I'm walking around campus, and people are like, that's the guy on the cover of Flex Magazine. Uh-huh. It made me want it even more. So here I was training for the national championships, looking at the guys that had won it, Bob Paris and Mike Christian, and all the people that came before me. I wanted to be them next. And naturally, 1987, 3 years out of high school, that dream became my reality. And I've been living a dream, Skip, ever since. And right. I'm 14 years in retirement. There's no one in bodybuilding that I wanted to meet that I haven't met. So can you imagine, from a teenager looking from the outside in, wanting to meet these people and be like these people, to be able to shake the hand of Larry Scott and hold that crown and take a photo with it and be employed by Joe Weider for 17 years and now Steve Bleckman for 8 years. And I pretty much touched over half of the Sandow trophies out there. I've held Ronnie Coleman's Sandow, Dorian Yates' Sandow, Phil Heath's Sandow, Frank Zane, who got the first Sandow trophy in 1977.
Uh-huh.
I may not have one, but I came very close to the holy grail of bodybuilding. And because I don't have one, I made it my point, following my historian type mentality, to interview those people that did have it. So I created the Evolution of Bodybuilding documentary, and I went to the homes of all of those Olympians, and I got my hands on those trophies. And I mean, I've been living the dream ever since. And 14 years in retirement, covering the sport for muscular development, I am no less a fan of the game than I was when I was a teenager, which gives me a reason to get out of bed every day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, Sean, I don't know if this is my perspective, you know, and maybe it's just that you've had this mindset. And when I talked to Rich Gasperi, he had the same business mindset. He was always hustling, looking for ways to maximize his talent. Lee Haney was the same way. I talked to Flex. He talked about that. But, you know, I come from a different kind of world where, you know, it's a lot of, maybe they get to top amateurs. That seems like the world that I was exposed to. And, you know, they don't have that business type of acumen. Now, you know, you said it all started by your deep, deep level passion for the sport. I mean, do you see what I'm saying? When you go out there, do you see people kind of in their caves? They want to win the trophy and they're not maximizing their talent, where they can make this whole journey a lot easier if they could give back, make some money, and work on their body. I mean, tell me, do you see this?
Let me tell you, I mean, I had a fun career. Training for the Mr. Olympia and dieting for the Mr. Olympia was never a chore. It never felt like a job. I mean, this was what got me out of bed. I breathed it. But I always knew an injury was right around the corner. A career was only going to last so long. That production creates longevity. Longevity creates revenue. If I can get paid to do what I love doing, then I better find a way to leverage what I'm doing as an athlete. I knew that very early. You know, I had, at the peak of my career, I had 9 different companies sending me checks on a monthly basis on top of my guest posing, my videos, my t-shirts, my seminars, and my contest prize money.
Uh-huh.
Because I knew it was a business. And when I wasn't eat, sleeping, and training, I needed to be engaged. And I also knew that towards the end of my career, the only way to keep the revenue coming was on the production end. And that's why when I turned pro at 22 years old, I created Sean Ray Productions, because even though I hadn't produced anything, I knew that I was the product. And I've always looked at myself as the product. If I make this product as best it can be, then I can create some type of demand. And now it's about supply and demand. It's about contract negotiations. It's about pricing. It's about, what do I value what I've done at? And then once I'm in that place where I'm guest posing or signing autographs, what else can I do? Network. I use every opportunity to network. So even though I'm there as a guest poser, I may wind up setting up a couple of return visits at supplement shops and local gyms and maybe a future guest posing. So I was always on, like you said, the hustle, because I never wanted to work for one person. I wanted to be in control of my financial future. I wanted to be in control of my career. That's why I never had a guru, a trainer, a manager. I'm self-made. I'm happy. If it all goes away tomorrow, I wouldn't change a thing. And I can tell you, I've been branded as selfish. Sean Ray's only in it for himself. Well, what bodybuilder is it? And when I hear that about myself, that he's only going to do for Sean Ray, I look back at the body of work. I look back at the bodybuilders that I've influenced, from Melvin Anthony to Richard Jones to Milo Sarchev and even Flex Wheeler. I mean, there are people that I still have my fingerprint on that I live vicariously through, because I'm no longer the hungry bodybuilder. I'm the promoter.
Yeah,
you know, I gave Dexter Jackson my Lifetime Achievement Award last year at the Sean Ray Classic, because he's doing and has done what no other bodybuilder before him has ever done.
Right.
He's a Masters Mr. Olympia. He's a five-time Arnold Classic winner. He won the Mr. Olympia in 2007. He went from bantamweight to heavyweight. Dexter Jackson is the bodybuilder's bodybuilder in terms of a blue-collar bodybuilder. Underrated, underappreciated, underrespected. But I recognized him, and I created an award to give to him. I did the same thing with Lee Haney, who won 8 Mr. Olympias, retired at 31 years old. We will never see that again. This year, I chose Rich Gaspari. So I find ways to give back, because giving back, especially to people that inspire me and inspire a lot of other people, is the best way to stay involved and engaged. I will be, you know, eternally grateful to continue recognizing people that do what I could only dream of doing. I mean, what Rich Gaspari did in the 80s, I was dreaming about doing. And then I had the pleasure of standing on the stage. And ultimately, I got a chance to actually beat him in head-to-head competition. And now I admire and respect for what he's done since he retired. I mean, he is one of the few guys that can do what he's done. And I'd be remiss if I didn't recognize him. So this year, he gets the Sean Ray Lifetime Achievement Award at my contest, August the 15th, because I respect where he came from, what he's doing, and what he continues to give back and create. I mean, that passion comes from way deep inside.
Uh-huh.
And I don't do it for myself anymore. I mean, I have a family to provide for, but a lot of things that I do affect a lot of different people. The Sean Ray Classic gives people an opportunity to qualify to go to the national championships, where they can get an IFBB pro card, where they can then ultimately maybe wind up on an Olympia stage. I created that. So those things make me happy. Those things keep my passion alive. I can't do it with my body anymore, so I do it with my mind.
Yeah, well, I follow you all over social media. You're on the road a lot. You're at all these shows. I'm curious, who comes to you for advice, especially like the business advice? Is it more higher level professionals or really top tier amateurs? Or how about just that girl in her first couple bikini contests? I mean, who connects with you more? Who asks advice from you the most as you're out on the road?
Well, I can tell you that, like, I just talked with Dallas McCarver, for example. He is the youngest guy to win an overall national qualifier. He was also 20 years old, I believe, at the North America Championships. Came out, did his first pro contest this past May, and won the California Championships as a pro. And that's a huge leap, because the last time we saw something like that happen was Rich Gaspari, and Rich went into his first Olympia and he got third place. I doubt we're going to see that from a Dallas McCarver, but I'm encouraging Dallas, irrespective of his age, he's now 24, to go, because I know I went to my first Olympia at 23, and I was pretty much, like, again, this analogy of being a pace car on a racetrack, but I landed in the middle of the pack. I had the best seat in the house. I was living my dream while I was still in college. I mean, the Monday after the Mr. Olympia, I was sitting in a college classroom.
Uh-huh.
I was celebrating my 23rd birthday. I just got done doing towel pulls with Barry DeMay and warm-ups with Lee Haney and riding on the bus over with Bob Paris. I mean, this guy was freaking on every cover of every magazine in 1984 when I graduated high school. So Dallas and I conversed a little bit, because he also appreciates the past the way that I did before me. And so I'm just trying to encourage that kid. Tomorrow's not promised to anybody. If you're qualified for the Mr. Olympia because you won a show, go. I mean, you may not have that chance next year. And by the way, they may not be talking about you next year, and you may not be able to qualify because the competition might be so tough. So I can appreciate talking with someone like that and asking me questions. The bikini girl that's looking for publicity and trying to get in a magazine, they come up to me as well. What I find a little discouraging is the majority of the bodybuilders that are older, closer to my age, wait until it's over before they want to create their own bodybuilding show, or they want to do their own seminar, or they want to try to re-engage and try to bring the guys together and do something for them. They should be doing it while they're competing.
Now, is that because their mindset is that they're putting it all on their physique, all in their art, and they worry about and they're not thinking business? Is that the way you see it?
Let me tell you, the mindset of a lot of bodybuilders is the same as a prize fighter. Prize fighter has a manager. A lot of bodybuilders get a trainer. The manager tells them what fights that they're going to fight, when they're going to fight, and they just go to the gym and train. The bodybuilder has a trainer that tells them when they're going to diet, when they're going to compete, what shows they're going to compete in. And that trainer has a bunch of other athletes, and they really are controlling this bodybuilder's career. And when that bodybuilder's career is over, they go on to the next athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And that bodybuilder's like, well, nobody set me up for success. I competed in shows that my trainer told me to compete in. It didn't go the way I wanted to go, and I should have done this a long time ago. But now it's too late because your career is over, and you're trying to figure out what your worth is. And no one has an identification with you because your trainer was the one that was out front the whole time. They don't know who you are. You were invisible until your trainer decided to throw you out there. And when you got third, fourth, or fifth, your trainer blamed it on you.
Yeah.
So I encourage these athletes to take control of their career. Don't let your trainer tell you what to do. You tell your trainer what you want to do and then pay him to help you do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the other way around. These trainers these days are now got so much power that they say, don't shoot with that magazine.
Oh, really?
This magazine. Don't train at that gym. Train at this gym. Don't do that contest. Do this contest. And what are you paying him for? His professional training services.
Right, right.
His dietary services. Yeah. His contest prep services. But you've just given him, right? Just given him the deed to your home and said, here, you tell me what to do with my career. And no one – who empowered the trainer to tell you what to do with your career? But a lot of athletes have done that, continue to do that, and therefore they're very ignorant at their own self-worth when it comes down to how much do I charge for an appearance.
Who do you think's doing it right out there? Are the young guys?
I'm gonna take my hat off to Phil Heath. Heath won his first pro show was my contest I promoted in Colorado in 2005 or 6. And as a four-time Mr. Olympian, I was with him over the weekend in Dallas, and you can hear that he's got a very strong command over who he is and what he's putting out there. He's engaging. He will fight you back on the internet when you throw him under the bus. And at the same time, he will stay to the last photograph that's being taken. He's handling the throne very well, as Lee Haney would say. The torch has been passed.
Uh-huh.
And Phil's doing a very good job, just like Jay did before for him.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, one that I think has also done very well is Dexter. Again, he's a one-off Mr. Olympia, the same way that Samir Banu was and Chris Dickerson was. But he's just as relevant today as he was 14 years ago when I competed in 2001. You know, he's coming off of a victory at the Arnold Classic. He's on cruise control till it's time to kick it into high gear. But no one tells Dexter what to do. Dexter's his own man. He doesn't have a supplement contract with anybody. He doesn't have a magazine contract with anybody. He puts his training services into Charles Glass. But when Dexter does something, you're dealing with Dexter the same way you're dealing with Phil. So very few small people, a small portion of people, are in total control of their careers, but it's also those that are at the very top of the echelon. There's a lot of bodybuilders coming in that don't have the proper guidance, so they just assume that the trainer that they're paying will give them the proper advice, business advice or otherwise, and they're just giving too much power to one individual. Own your space. Learn who you are. Find your net worth. Pick out the shows that you want to do, and be more hands-on. You know, don't just blindly follow what your trainer is telling you to do. Question it, challenge it, put it to work. But if you just do what your trainer tells you to do, you're going to look the way you want. Your trainer wants you to look, and you lose what it was that you got in the sport to look like in the first place.
Right, right. Well, Phil, Jay, Dexter, they've been around a long time. I'm curious. You know, you talked about Dallas McCarver. Are there any younger guys that you see that are doing it right?
Let me tell you. Dallas is probably the youngest, but I'm concerned about Justin Compton. I mean, Justin Compton, he was second at the Nationals. He didn't win the overall at the Nationals of the year that he should have. He lost out to Brian Yerske, and I was in outrage about that because Justin clearly should have beat Brian Yerske that year. He went on to win the Europa Dallas. I'm sorry, he went on to win the Europa Orlando, and then he went to the Arnold Classic, and he got third place this year. In his first pro show, he was fifth in Chicago, Wings of Strength. He qualifies. He could have qualified this year. When he got third at the Arnold Classic, he could have went back not a month later and defended his title at the Europa in Orlando. He chose not to. As a matter of fact, he chose not to even try to qualify for the Mr. Olympia. And for what? To be bigger? I mean, no one said he was small. What are you waiting for? You see him guest posing at over 300 pounds right now. He looks like the next coming of Jay Cutler.
Uh-huh.
But the kid is letting the grains of sand trickle through the hourglass, and he's going to wake up one day and wish that he had taken advantage of the time that he was given. I mean, he could be in this year's Mr. Olympia and be a top five contender if he kept his nose to the grindstone. He could have another pro win under his belt. Instead, you go to the Arnold Classic, you get third, and you take a whole year off. Now you got to go back in 2016 to qualify. And I don't know. I think it's a poor strategy.
Right.
I only lifted weight, Skip. I was only bodybuilding, Skip, because I wanted to be Mr. Olympia. And the only way I could be Mr. Olympia was to qualify and go. And now you have like Evan Sinopani and these guys that are sitting back waiting for something to happen. It's sad because we're not seeing the best of the best on that stage at the Mr. Olympia because these guys have options.
Well, what do you think about like Dana Lynn Bailey, DLB? I mean,
DLB, let me tell you, DLB, you go girl.
Uh-huh.
She is not waiting for someone to make her. She's making her own way. She's maximizing her social media, has a supportive husband that's thrown her out there. She knows when to turn up and be this wild thing, and she knows when to tone it down and look cute and pretty.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
What Dana is doing is raising the bar for all those other girls that really want to have control of their own financial future and walk to the beat of their own drum. You don't see a whole lot of women that do it. Typically, they've got to have someone do everything for them. But
right,
Dana
right.
came out of the box, doing what she has to do. I was there when she got her pro card and won the Junior Nationals. She, got second at the Ms. Olympia, got second at the Arnold Classic. Those seconds don't mean anything. She makes more money off the stage than she does on. My career was the same as hers. I didn't have the 4 million social media followers that she's got, but she has found a way to leverage her career, and more power to her.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, you know what I want to do? We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, you have so many things going on, right? I want to break down each one. I want to talk about shreds. I want to talk about your Nerium. I want to talk about, how you're, in the Middle East doing these, you're the master of ceremonies. I want to break each one down, and I want to give these guys some ideas, these up-and-comers, right, who
sure.
are focused on the physiques, just like you. They're historians of the sport, and I think the specific examples on, how you went out and got these, how they were all formed, will give them some ideas. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. So, you have your bodybuilding and training efforts going in the right direction. That's awesome. Are you now ready to take your entire life to the next level too? Sure, it takes a lot of focus and discipline to build a great body, but that's not going to automatically translate into an incredible overall life too, unless you have a clear-cut vision for exactly what you want for your life and an effective plan that you really believe in to make it happen. Maybe you've already realized this. Your body has improved dramatically. People compliment you all the time, but you still feel that there's something missing. What's your plan to become more than just a great body and create an amazing, balanced, overall quality of life that you can be proud of and confidently work toward? One-on-one peak performance coaching specialist Skip LaCour will help you channel all that your hard work, discipline, and abilities to become more than just muscles and help you build a life filled with confidence, passion, and purpose. You can have it all. Confidence in every social situation, wealth, opportunity, freedom,
love, and connection, along with your impressive physical body and amazing health. When you know the strategies to put it all together and execute them on a continual basis, go to SkipLacourCoaching.com and see the different one-on-one life coaching plans Skip LaCour has to help you. Set up a free coaching session to see if this exclusive next-level one-on-one coaching program is right for you by sending Skip an email at Skip@SkipLacourCoaching.com.
We are back not only with a Hall of Fame bodybuilder and a bodybuilding legend, a businessman extraordinaire, and he's sharing a lot of tips with you, what he sees the guys who are doing it well in our sport, making the most out of their physiques and making it a lifestyle like he did. All right, so he's going to let me get specific and maybe a little personal and give us some specific strategies on all these things that he's got going on. All right, so tell me about now let's start with Joe Weider. I mean, that was the place to be. That was the only place to be. Now, how did that come about? Is it just because when you're a champion, he gets your hand selected? How did that go about? What can people learn out there?
So I'm 17 years old in 1983. I went to compete in the NPC Los Angeles Championships under the auspices of there being a teenage division. I got there, and there was no teenage division. I had to go into the open division, and I went in the open division as a middleweight. And unbeknownst to me, I got third place, and I had lost out to it was Bob Parris's present boyfriend at the time, Matt Petetti. They didn't talk about the guy that was second place, and not a whole lot of people talked about Matt Petetti. A lot of people were talking about the teenager in the open category that beat a bunch of grown-ass men, because while I was third, there was a whole bunch of people behind me, and I was 17. And I had a John Brown style of posing that was ahead of my time, but I was able to pull it off. And 2 weeks later, I went to the AAU Mr. Los Angeles that I heard was being held at Venice High School. And I went into that because they told me that's where you find the teenagers. So I went and I won that contest. So my first time out of the box, it was like, bam, I won my show in 2 weeks. But the NPC show is what gave me recognition. And ironically, about 3 weeks after that show that I got third at, I got a letter in the mail that was from Chris Dickerson. This is 1983. Uh-huh. Chris Dickerson was Mr. Olympia in 1982. And it was mailed to my house. I live with my parents.
Uh-huh.
And he found me through the registration form, and the letter just basically – it was on a Mr. Olympia letterhead. It basically just said what an honor and a privilege it was to watch such like a bright talent at such a young age come out there and have complete and utter control of his physique and woo the crowd to a place that would have me writing you this letter. If you're ever in Venice Beach, I would love the opportunity to have a bite to eat, maybe a workout, and talk bodybuilding.
Wow.
Signed, Mr. Olympia – Chris Dickerson, by the odds, I was like, holy crap. Like, what the hell just happened? I mean, this is snail mail, right? So
right.
I couldn't share this with anybody but my mentor, which was John Brown, who started me off bodybuilding. And naturally, John was a little intimidated because he thought maybe he's losing his protege to Mr. Olympia. But he said, look, you need to go down there and find out what this is about, because now you'll be able to see your future. Chris Dickerson might be 5'5". And at the time, he may have been 43 years old, but he was Mr. Olympia, and he won the contest in head-to-head competition against some very great bodybuilders that included Samir Banu and Frank Zane and the likes. And so I immediately set up an opportunity to go down there. It probably took me a month or so, but I took my girlfriend down there. I was a little intimidated. We met at some omelet house. We ate out. But I was still pinching myself. I can't believe I'm looking at Mr. – I had his picture on my wall, and he's buying me lunch. And – from that, we didn't go to the gym. I didn't do anything that day, but we rearranged an opportunity for me to come down there. And I came down there tracking calves with Chris Dickerson. I got to tell you, man, that was when I committed my becoming Mr. Olympia. That's when I said, you know, he did his normal workout, but I was training my ass off and training with John Brown. I was prepared, and he couldn't believe the level of intensity of my workout. I imagine probably like having an opportunity to spar with Mike Tyson. So you got to show up for the sparring match. Chris Dickerson didn't think I was going to come there to push him. He just thought maybe I was going to follow him, but I pushed Chris Dickerson at 17 years old. Anyway, long story short, that was the beginning of my serious involvement with body and my commitment to the game. And I remained friends with Chris Dickerson throughout my career. And I was honored that even though he came out of retirement, I got to compete against him in 1990 and talk shop with him backstage at the Arnold Classic, where I failed the drug test after I won that show. But what an opportunity to come full circle with a guy like Chris Dickerson in bodybuilding. That's what sucked me into the game.
Yeah, and so to be a weeder athlete at the time, was that mostly based on you being elite?
I'm sorry. Let me back up, because that was what the question was. So from that encounter with Chris Dickerson, he then turned me on to Iron Man's John Balik. And when I went on to compete at the Teenage National Championships at 18 years old, John Balik then took photographs of me for Iron Man, but Chris Dickerson then talked with Kevin Wayne, which was the son of Ricky Wayne, who at the time was the editor-in-chief of Flex Magazine, and they created the first section in Flex Magazine called the Teen Scene. And Kevin Wayne was a photographer. His girlfriend, Karen, was the writer. Karen came down to Gold's Gym. They did a nice little profile on who I was. And, of course, you know, I'm ever grateful to Chris Dickerson and Kevin and Karen and then, of course, Ricky Wayne, because I had to go down to Weederland. And in going down to Weederland and talking with Ricky Wayne, who walked me into Joe Weider's office, I'm 18 years old and I'm in Joe Weider's office. I mean, this is the beginning and the end. I don't know who I can even call. We didn't have cell phones back in the day, but I had to pinch myself. Weider Wonderland was about a 45-minute drive. I'm barely 18 years old, and I'm, you know, doing an article for a Teen Scene thing, and Joe's there in living color. And it was the most impressionable thing for me, because from that chance encounter with an article, I would go on to win the NPC national title in 1985, the Junior World Championships in Australia in 1985, and be back in Joe Weider's office for the cover shot on Flex Magazine. I got to think even today that I was probably the youngest guy on the cover of Flex Magazine. And before my career was over, according to Peter McGough, I received more covers than any other bodybuilder in the history of Flex Magazine, including Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, wow.
Now, whether that still remains true, I'm not sure. You know, we had some great champions. I know Jay Cutler and Arnold's constantly getting cover shots. But when I retired, I had that dubious distinction of having more cover shots than everyone in the history of Flex Magazine. And it goes back to that one chance encounter with Chris Dickerson, John Balik, Kevin Wayne, to Ricky Wayne, to Bill Reynolds, to Joe Weider, and a 17-year run of employment. Joe Weider gave me my contract when I won the national championships in 1987. And from that time in 1987 until Joe sold the magazine in 2004, I was a Weider contracted athlete. My primary source of income came from being a sponsored athlete.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, you know, your professionalism, I'm sure you had it. Were there people there that they got into Joe Weider's good graces, but then they just blew it because of their lack of professionalism? I'm curious to keep that contract. Is it like based on performance and you can be a crappy guy? How did that work? You know, like,
no,
for example.
I mean, Joe was generous to a fault. I mean, he gave Victor Richards, who never turned pro, a contract. He was slow to hand out contracts to people he didn't have relationships with. I know he gave Lee Haney and his wife Shirley, he gave Shirley a job and gave Lee Haney, you know, a place to stay when he came out here and won the Mr. Olympia. You know, Joe Weider was generous to a fault. I'm sure plenty of people thought, why are you paying that guy? And why are you giving this person that money? And there were a lot of people that other people thought were not worthy of the Weider payroll, but Joe wanted to help everyone.
Okay.
The best part of bodybuilding is that he was a fan first. So there was none of that type of stuff going on. I mean, he was generous no matter what the title. My only obligation to Joe was to do interviews and photo shoots.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to get a little controversial. You know, back when I was coming up and I'd be talking to all the bodybuilders, it'd be, if you were a black bodybuilder, you aren't going to get a cover. that wasn't true of your case. Did you feel that controversy? Did you hear that controversy? I mean, you transcended above it. I mean, not only because you being a great bodybuilder, being a good-looking man and all that. Tell me about that and, you know.
Well, I mean, listen, Skip, it was there. I mean, Ricky Wayne was the editor of Flex Magazine, but he was only there for a short period of time. I mean, you had Jerry Candela, you had Bill Reynolds, you had Peter McGough. You had Flex editors revolved. I mean, they rotated. So when you have in any business – that's run by basically white people. Remember, Joe and his brother are Jewish as well.
Uh-huh.
Robbie Robinson was not a glamorized cover guy. Roy Callender was not a glamorized cover guy. Joe typically wound up he had a certain look. I mean, right. Troy Zuccolato, who never won a pro show, who was my training partner, he only won the Nationals in 1989. He got a bunch of muscle and fitness cover shots, and you know, he was never one of the guys that was going to be Mr. Olympia, but he had the California surfer look. I mean, you can't tell someone who to put on a cover, but I can tell you, Lee Haney was one of the more under-glamorized bodybuilder, along with Vince Taylor. I think Vince only got maybe one or two cover shots, and Vince won 5 Masters Olympias and a national title and a slew of professional shows. I got the brunt of some of that criticism because some people – well, you're different. Well, you're not all the way black.
Yeah,
I heard all kind of stuff. But you know what? I mean,
no. But was it real? I mean, I hear there's an economic part of it that, you know, 13% of the population is black, and so you want a cover that people can relate to. It's not based on merit on the show. I mean, you heard all this stuff.
The only time I had to recognize what color I was when I was at home talking to my father about traveling the world. You know, I didn't have to be reminded that I was black. I look in the mirror every day and saw my color. But, you know, like a lot of white kids, they don't have to come home and have their parents tell them, you know, don't get in trouble because if you do, you know, they may look at you differently because you're black. Don't get too excited because when it's time to go to the dance and you go to ask the girl if she says no, don't take it personal because we don't know what their parents think of black people. We were the only black people on the block. I was always the only black guy on the team. I grew up in a predominantly white neighborhood, so the only time I remembered or had to be reminded that I was black was through my dad's experiences. He had to sue to get his own home in the neighborhood that we bought in because they didn't want a black family there.
Yeah.
So my dad, born in 1928, he's seen it all. He had to live it, and he had to prepare his kids that would be men that be mindful. You are black, and you driving that fancy car can get you in trouble. You know, you don't have to be speeding. You're not
right. You know. Well, that's one thing I respect about you. I mean, you transcend, you know, color because of your accomplishments. I mean, you probably heard that before, but you're still in touch as an activist. I hear you speaking up on social media. To me, that's I respect you. You know, for all that. Anyway,
well, I can tell you, Joe Weider did not have a racist color line, color view in his body. Not at all. Not from my dealings with him. And my body of work is reflective of that. I was one of the more photographed guys that he used to publicize what he had. And again, you don't have a 17-year working relationship on the payroll if you got a guy that doesn't like black people. I mean, Joe saw me as an athlete, which is the same way he saw, you know, a lot of people before me. I mean, Sergio is from Cuba, you know, Franco's from Italy, and Arnold's from Austria. I mean, this was a job of equal opportunity, and he employed Germans and Jews and Muslim, whatever. I mean, he didn't care about that. He wanted to see how big your arms were and whether or not you could be a potential Olympian. I didn't have that on any level throughout my walk in professional bodybuilding, let alone as an advertised bodybuilder. I also had to put myself out there, Skip.
Right.
In terms of being available to be photographed. You'd be surprised at how many bodybuilders, and this goes at Lee Haney, it goes directly to Vince Taylor as well, and Paul Dillette, and even Flex Wheeler. How many of those guys turned down photo shoots because they were training for the Mr. Olympia, because they were dieting, because they did not want to be photographed, and then when their careers were over, complained that there's no pictures. Well, you know, the photographers were here. I lived in California. I went out of my way to get in front of those cameras. You would be surprised. I filled in for so many bodybuilders when they canceled the shoot on a moment's notice. You can ask Chris Lund.
Uh-huh.
When they canceled, he called me, and I was there in a heartbeat because I would be ready 3 weeks before a show, and I'd stay ready a month or two after a show. So I got in front of that camera every time my phone rang because I knew that would be the only thing I had at the end of my career.
Yeah.
Pictures.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing that you mentioned before, and you know, I always saw you as a generally confident guy. I mean, you talked about your father and influence of your family. You were successful in football, diving. I mean, seemed like you're a popular kid. I don't know if I generally see that with when I think of the masses of who are attracted to bodybuilding. You talked about go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to say most people come to this sport with deficiencies and with baggage their parents don't understand. You know, they're fat, they're skinny, they got eating disorders, there's low self-esteem issues. A lot of people come to this business through personal hangups.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've definitely, definitely experienced that. I've definitely seen all that. And I think, see, this is when, because we're talking about business now and your mindset that helped you succeed. And, you know, I deal with people, I coach people all the time about having, how to have success in life. And, you know, you talk to 20 guys every single week, right? You start breaking down the strategies for success. You see it in people. You don't have to be a genius to put the pieces together. And one thing about you is that because you had that stable family life and that foundation of confidence, when it came to business, I mean, it was business for you, and you're dealing with, I mean, if you were labeled, just say, as selfish, you talked about that. Well, that's because I think a lot of people, when they come into bodybuilding, they're not thinking about money until they're really far into it, and they really just did it for the seam. They're overcompensating. They're feeling good. They're getting control of their emotions. That's what bodybuilding and weight training is doing for them. And then they do it for free. They love it. You know, it's a way to normalize, to control their emotions, to feel good about themselves. And then, you know, 15 years into the journey, they have their hand out. Hey, why aren't I getting paid for this? Where you didn't have that mindset, and it's like an artist mentality versus a business mentality. And I think that's why you were labeled as selfish, because you were the only one taking care of business. It was just a different mindset than they were used to. Did you see it that way? I mean,
absolutely. Listen, when I go into a room talk about Sean Ray, I'm the one that has the PhD. You know, I'm the one with a doctorate on Sean Ray. I have the MBA. I know myself better than anyone else. I know what I'm willing to do and for how much I'm going to do it. But everything's negotiable. So no one can go in there. No one wants to really even talk to your manager. When they want to guest poser, that gym owner, that contest promoter wants to pick Sean Ray up at the airport and get to know who Sean Ray is, because that's who I'm going to be giving my money to. Uh-huh. I chose you to come and be the star at my show, to meet my fans, because I like your work and I want to know who you are before you leave in a day and a half. So let me pick you up and we'll take you to dinner and meet my family and stop by my gym or come to my supplement store. And they don't want to call Sean Ray and go, hi, this is John Doe. I'm Sean Ray's manager. He needs, you know, $3,000. He needs a business class plane ticket. He'd like to stay at the, Sheraton Hotel, and can someone pick him up at 8 o'clock in the morning? And he only eats chicken and rice, and he's talking to somebody. He doesn't even know who the hell this person is. He's talking to John Doe. Where's Sean Ray? Hello.
Right. Right.
So I always made myself the negotiator. I always made myself available. I'm bought for the weekend, and I know you only have one shot to make a first impression.
Yeah.
And most of the places that I ever went in my career, I came back. And most of the time when I was there doing one thing, I leveraged it and created another thing. So I always knew that the art of the deal is in the sequel. I mean, Sylvester Stallone became a household name because he made six Rocky movies, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you saw the first one and you liked it, you came back to the second, you came back to the third. Okay, the might not have been so great, but, you know, there is, but you
right.
want to come back and find out what number five was.
Yeah.
So I constantly, as a bodybuilder, would check back in. If you took the time to fly me somewhere and pay me to come guest pose, you know, you either got a thank you letter, or you got a phone call, or you got, hey, I'm available next year. Get at me early so I'm not booked. And Jay Cutler is very similar to that.
Right,
he picked
right.
up on it.
Yeah.
He's done very well as a result of that. So I know about having personal relationships, but there's so many people, especially with the internet now, that are on the outside looking in that would rather sit back and talk smack about how selfish someone is, but they're not measuring the level of commitment to what it takes to do it. I've been retired 14 years, Skip. I'm doing the same thing
right.
now that I was doing when I competed for the biggest contest in the world, except I have more luxury in doing it. My time is managed by Sean Ray Productions,
yeah.
not by Steve Blackman or Shreds or Nero. Right. I leverage my time based on my family time, and I leverage my pro bodybuilding career as an individual based on my time. That was all about Sean Ray.
Right.
Now the only people I have to consider here.
It's knowing your value and respecting your value, and that's starting on a lot higher plane than a lot of people who are in this business. You know, you talk about someone else who is misunderstood, who is someone I have a massive amount of respect for in the business world, is your employer right now, Steve Blackman. He gets a lot of flack, but, you know, the thing is, he runs it like a business, and he's with people who don't understand business. I mean, tell me what your thoughts are about that.
Well, you know, I mean, he is Joe Weider number two. I mean, he learned from the best, and he had to compete against the best. Steve Blackman had to survive with his magazine at a time where Joe Weider bought up every top name there was. He almost put muscular development out of business and had to turn into the all-natural muscular development because he couldn't photograph any of the top guys because they were all under contract with Joe Weider. Like 20,
and that's where I got
guys.
To come in, right?
Absolutely. So through that and through his perseverance and through his tutelage of watching what Joe was doing, it turned the corner somewhere in the early 2000s, and suddenly Steve Blackman had everyone under contract, and Weider was struggling to have content with relevant athletes. So Joe since passed on, and Steve has found his own way. The same way where, you know, I had Chris Dickerson to kind of follow in his footsteps before I made my own footsteps. And what Steve has been able to do is create opportunity. He's very smart at moving the pieces on the chessboard. I'll give you a contract for 1 year. There's no guarantee you're going to be re-signed, but I'll give you an opportunity. And when that next year comes around, guess what? There's a new guy coming in. There's a new national champion, a new USA winner. I'm going to take that money. I'm going to give this guy an opportunity. And Steve gets the short end of the stick because some people don't get renewed or re-signed. And they go, wow, I can't believe he let him go. And I can't believe he just used him. And I can't believe that they must not have the money. And so he's misperceived a lot of times. But
he is
the second coming of Joe Weider when it comes down to creating opportunity. And by the way, he does have the number one hardcore bodybuilding magazine in the world. The numbers don't lie, and the content doesn't lie. Things change. The digital age has minimized a little bit of the impact of the magazine, but Steve's magazine right now, today, is better than it ever was in the creation of muscular development.
Yeah. So tell me about Shreds.
I give him all the respect in the world.
No, so do I. I have the ultimate respect from – I mean I really enjoyed working with him, you know, and I hear what he says, and I just think that some people just don't understand the business. Again, it goes back down to that artist mentality. Look, I have this physique, and then they don't do much with it, and they're not kind of creating that business value, and they just don't understand that.
Well, his website, he created a digital website. Steve's in the magazine business, but now he's got a website that rivals his magazine, so he's changed with the times.
Uh-huh.
He hired the right personnel. And he's the only source to go to if you still are a hardcore fan to follow what's relevant in the sport of bodybuilding. Look, we just had a crew up at the Europa show in Dallas. Before that, we were all in Brazil. Before we were all in Brazil, we're all in New York. I mean, we are still following and traveling the world. We're the only entity traveling and following the world of bodybuilding to bring it to that viewer that doesn't have an opportunity to get on a plane and be there in person.
Right.
We're sending video clips. We're doing personal training interviews. We're doing online play-by-play. The best photography. I mean, I couldn't be more proud of what Steve Blackman has done for bodybuilding than I was when I was working for Joe Weider.
Yeah, no, that's a great compliment, especially coming from you. But and he really deserves it. He really does.
Absolutely, I live it. I live it. I'm grateful.
So tell me about Shreds. I mean, that's in a long line of endorsement deals that you've had over the time. So tell me, how did you go about that? What insight can you give us about that particular deal that you put together?
Well, see, Shreds was coming up slowly. They are an Instagram sensation. They
are
a social media phenomenal company that has pretty much survived exclusively without having to be watered down through distribution, third-party companies. I mean, everybody that comes out with a product, they want to go to Europa, they want to go through GNC, they want to go through bodybuilding.com or Lone Star. And you have this middleman where the price just keeps getting kicked up, 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 and up. Well, these guys are all about quality control. They're like, we got our own distribution. You want to buy our product, go to our website. We'll drop ship it and mail it to you, pretty much the same way that bodybuilding.com does. And they decided to let the users of their products become the celebrity. So they have so many people out there through Instagram, you know, show me your transformation and we'll send you out some of our product to help you along the way.
Uh-huh.
There's so many people that want to belong to something bigger than themselves.
Yeah.
And most of the major supplement companies, they only want you to belong if you're a champion. They won't give you a contract unless you're out there doing the business of bodybuilding and competing and being a winner. Now some companies are looking at your social media following and bringing you on board because of that. But what Shreds has done, they've helped give the real person an opportunity to transform their lives and their image into a place where they can actually have the chance to be a sponsored athlete. Bill Phillips tried that way back in the late 90s by giving away cars for the best body transformation. And it did very well for the company called EAS.
Right.
What Shreds has done is, you know, literally you take the picture and stick it up on Instagram and use the product and show us your progress. They've got thousands of people, if not millions of people, that are doing it, and it's on a global scale. And the good thing about Shreds is that they're not out there contracting a bunch of athletes, but they're helping a lot of athletes along their fitness goals by giving away more free product than they are giving away sponsorships. And it's coming back tenfold in the way of not having to pay for advertising. If you've got 100 people out there that each have 50 to 100,000 followers on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, putting your product out there on their social media, you know, you're hitting 5 million people in one post that's being shared and copied and pasted, and they're not having to pay for it. They're only just sending out some product. So it's a great strategy.
Yeah.
Arvin Lal, who owns that company, has given more people opportunity to become pseudo-famous, but also an opportunity to afford the product, because that's where the big rub is.
Right,
a lot of people can't afford the products.
Yeah. Well,
so
you know,
giving product away.
It's interesting, such a new school, forward-thinking type of marketing plan like that, that a lot of people are, you know, they're trying to model that success, that they came to an old school guy like you. Tell me about that.
Well, the coming to me was like, you know, they wanted to get out there. There's a lot of doors they couldn't get in because they don't know who the owners are, because the owners specialize in giving away free product, giving away opportunity, helping these people change the way they live, the way they think, allow them to belong to something that has core values with it involved. And so what they wanted to use me for was the connection, the familiar name that can get them a seat at the table, that gives them credibility, so
yes.
to speak. Because I'm not going to put my name on just anything.
Right.
So if Sean Ray's involved, they know I've got a history of doing business with reputable people. And the last thing we want to do is bring out a product and put my name on it that's no good. And when that happened, I jumped ship. That happened with the company that I was with prior. They just didn't produce the product, and I got my name and my likeness away from that company. And you never know when you get in bed with a company, you know, what's happening at the top levels. Well, I did my research with Shreds. They are now literally the number one social media. They've spent over $1 million on their booth display at the Mr. Olympia last year alone.
Uh-huh.
That money went into supporting what we do as an industry, the IFBB, the Mr. Olympia Weekend. I brought Shreds to the Olympia Weekend. So that's another way where I'm not out there waving a flag, look what I've done. I'm a connector. I'm a networker. And
providing real world, real dollar value today, not
absolutely.
By –
And I'm proud of that. So when people say it's all about Sean Ray, ask the people that, you know, employ me.
Right,
ask
right,
the people
right,
that
right.
I work for. Ask Steve Bleckman, ask Joe Weider, ask Arvin Lal, ask the, you know, the people at Nerium. I put my name on something, I'm going to give it everything I got. You know why? Because I can't go to the gym and do what I used to do on the level I used to do it.
Right.
So I turn that into my business. When I go to business and I go to work for somebody, I try to be that Mr. Olympia for that company.
Yeah, I caught some of your hustle on social media. I thought it was cool. Now, I might have misinterpreted it, but I think you were in the Middle East, and you were the master of ceremonies for a show. And from social media, from the Middle East, you were planting a seed for another appearance somewhere else in the world. I don't know. Do you remember that?
Absolutely. Listen, at the end of the day, it's not where you are that is the most important thing, but where you're going. And social media is the best place to do a commercial. So I can show you what I was, That's easy. That's just taking you to another time and another place that is history. But social media is best used and served for where you're going or where you would like to be. Information. Let them know ahead of time before you get there so they can anticipate your arrival, so you can prepare for that next appearance, so you can prepare for that next deal. And so when I'm someplace, I'll show you where I'm at, but I want you to also know where I'm going. That is my vision in terms of utilizing social media at its best. Of course, this weekend I'm going to be in Santa Clara with you at the Legends seminar, both Saturday and Sunday. Lee Haney, Chris Cormier, Flex Wheeler, Mike Christian. I mean, we promote. That's what we do. We also inform and we educate. Last weekend I was in Dallas covering the Europa Show for Muscular Development. And that's the place where President John F. Kennedy was shot dead and assassinated. And I thought, you know what? I owe it to the people that are following me that will never come to Dallas, that don't really know American history, to go over there and give a minute or two to show that from my perspective. So I went exactly where John F. Kennedy was shot, filmed the book Depository, the X on the spot where he was shot, the grassy knoll. And I gave a little – this is Sean Reed reporting from Dallas, Texas, where in 1963, you know, John F. Kennedy took his last breath. And that's what I've evolved into. I'm a reporter, whether I like it or not.
Yeah.
I report the news. I share my experiences. And for me, that's the blessing of social media. I don't want to just stand there and be braggadocious about who I was. I'd rather show you who I am and also where I am and what significance it is. So if I have an opportunity – to share that experience with the world, I'll put it in its proper context and I'll give it to the social media and let people decide. I mean, again, you saw me, I'm on a political debate about the Confederate flag over in South Carolina that's finally come down.
Yeah.
I'm more than just a bodybuilder. I've always thought that about myself.
Tell me about Sean Ray's skincare, because this is an opportunity. You're just not the new superstar rep of the company. You're bringing it into our entire niche, our entire tribe. But regular guys get to be on your team and can talk to you, text you. I mean, talk about that opportunity.
Yeah, it opened up a whole nother door. I mean, I was approached through a direct marketing service that has a very nice residual compounding income plan built into the back of it. I was never part of an MLM in my life. But, you know, in our industry, I've seen it all from the master of ceremonies podium to the judges table to backstage where someone hands me their phone and asks to take a selfie. Our business, whether we like it or not, is about vanity. And a light bulb went off when this opportunity came to me, because so many people spend so much money on their tanning products and their hair and their makeup, their bikinis and their posing suits. And then they forget that, you know, the stretch marks that go right across their stomach, the zits that are all over their back from the hormonal changes, the dried out skin from the years of tanning and the years of laying in the sun, to our master's competitors that are just, you know, they look weathered because of the constant up and down of the yo-yo dieting. And along comes an anti-aging skincare product that can help reverse the aging process as it relates to your skin. I saw that as a vehicle for me, because I interface with all kinds of athletes, bikini to master's competitors. It doesn't matter, black, white, or Asian. We all have skin. And guess what? The first thing a judge sees, the first thing the cameraman picks up, the first thing the tanning person sees before they lay that on your skin is your skin. How serious are you about what you look like? Because when that photograph is taken and you didn't take care of your skin in between shows, it's going to show everything, unless you got a photographer that's going to, you know, charge you to, you know, wash all that stuff out.
Right,
well,
right.
As it started getting introduced to the industry, and I began talking to trainers, I began talking to photographers and tanning companies like Liquid Sunrays and ProTan, and contest promoters and coaches, they all understood that we were long overdue for a product that could help an athlete, no matter what the age, throughout their journey on and off the stage, and also their family at home, because there's women that have babies that have, you know, wind up with stretch marks. There are men that go through body transformations. It applies to everyone. And even if you don't have issues with your skin, it is preventative. It tightens, it firms, it rehydrates, it helps with the discoloration, it helps fade the stretch marks. All the science is real. The clinical studies are right there on the website. I didn't have to be sold on the product. I needed the product to come home to share with my friends and my family. And they responded.
Yeah.
I came in March, Skip. We have almost 450 plus people on Team Sean Ray working in concert through the NPC, through the IFBB, that people are now sharing it across the board. People that I brought on are telling people that they bring on, that they bring on, and people are able to get residual compounding money strictly on the basis of being able to share and educate. So here's a product I don't have to sell. It sells itself. Go to my website, seanray.nerium.com. It's all self-explanatory. The video testimonies are there. The science of the product are there. The compensation plan is there. I am more happy about being involved with Nerium, and I never thought I'd be selling and marketing and promoting skincare. I'm more happy that I'm involved with them because I can actually help more people that way than I could if I was a personal trainer.
Yeah.
I can't reach as many people personally training people, but man, I go to a show that's got 300-400 athletes in it and hand out my business card. And out of those 300 or 400, if 100 have issues with their skin, I was able to help them. I brought a product that they never heard of that is there to help them. And if they're motivated because of the results that they see, they can become brand partners and we can be doing business together. I mean, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
We've got national champion Todd Jewell, Don Long, the guy that introduced me to professional bodybuilding, John Brown, J.M. Mannion, who he manages a lot of girls for the FMG agency. Shannon Day just came on from Bombshells. We have Marilyn Spatola, the owner and CEO of Liquid Sunrays. We have a very eclectic group of people that are involved because they see the value of helping the athletes that they're trying to help in a way that before they never could have. They never could have.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the most attractive things, they get on Team Sean Ray. And so, you know, talk about this business attitude. I mean, you're a very inspirational guy. You're very motivating. You're very driven. How much do they get a piece of you when they come to the Sean Ray team?
I have said rhetorically that anybody that's on my team has access to me for whatever they need, because it is relationship marketing as much as it is network marketing. I signed a girl up on my team that sold insurance, and within a week I got an insurance thing in the mail for my renewal of my homeowner's insurance. Well, we revisited. I had her look it over. She saved me $920 on my policy. Well, I mean, that was basically how much it cost for me to join Nerium.
Right, right.
I got my money back because she redid my policy. I turned around and I rolled my car insurance into my homeowner's insurance policy, and I got another $350 back. So my involvement with Nerium International has been paid for by a brand partner that happens to sell insurance. And from that, I shared my savings on my homeowner's insurance and car insurance with several other people that were brand partners with me, and they had their policies redone. So it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah,
my sister's a tax attorney. A lot of people were doing taxes at the time that I joined. I've made her a referral counselor, pretty much, for people that are trying to get tax benefits and tax breaks from an expert. And now my sister, who's a brand partner in Nerium, who's also a tax attorney, is helping people on my team with their taxes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I got my fool back in high school who does construction and home rebuilding and hotel renovations. It's such a referral type business that you just don't know who you're going to wind up joining the business. And with J.M. Mannion being a brand partner in Nerium, as a photographer, I'm able to send people to J.M., and J.M.'s able, who looks through the camera lens, who sees the skin better than you and I do, who captures that moment in time forever, he's able to then refer people to a solution to their skin problems through the use of Nerium anti-aging skincare. So really, yeah. This is something that I'm super, super excited about because it helps more people than just me.
Yeah, no, I've looked at the science, and I've always been into skincare myself. So the thing is, you know, I'm really into integrity. The product has got to, you know, regardless of the residual benefits of it, the product has got to stand on its own, and the science is all there. And skincare is a big business. I mean, putting our money there, it's a big business. You go to Nordstrom, you see how much the skincare costs and all the people investing in that. But when you talk about the team, the tribe, and then the residual benefits like an insurance agent, like a tax attorney and things like that, it sounds like a really good, you know, like-minded people too, or you want to be more like Sean Ray. So go to Sean Ray Skincare.com. And then there's a form to fill out that goes right to you, and then you contact, you get them in touch with the right people, right?
Yeah,
right.
And I can tell you, it's one of those things where, listen, I don't need skincare to look forever young, but who doesn't want to take care of themselves? I got into bodybuilding to look young. When you look young, you feel better. And then, of course, if that's what's happening with you, you share it with like-minded people. Well, if I can get paid to do that, I'm going to do it because, look, money creates freedom.
Right,
freedom creates opportunity. I've got kids. My sister has kids. My friends have kids. I mean, this isn't something that just enriches Sean Ray. Again, it comes back to, well, he's just doing that for the money. Yeah, you're damn right.
You know,
I like to make money. At the same time, I like to make you some money too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Sean, you're getting to a point that I deal with all the time as I do my life coaching. I get people, they have these beliefs about money and it's not empowering. It's got, they make it either or. Either I'm this angel and I'm an artist, or I'm selfish and make money. And you're a perfect example of that. It doesn't have to be an either or, it's an and. And hell, if anybody to get in your circles to learn these mental strategies so they can have it all in life, you know, that would be a great reason to get on your team. You know?
I've been on the phone more now through working with Nerium International as a network marketer and a relationship marketer, talking and sharing strategy, business, opportunity, while getting more and more educated about how I look. I mean, people spend thousands of dollars to put makeup on to cover up the aging process. People spend thousands and thousands of dollars on tattoos to hide the stretch marks. Here's a product where you don't have to do that. So I don't have to sell anybody on it because the testimonials are out there that were there before I came on board. 3.5-year-old company, $600, $700 million strong. They're on their way to be a billion-dollar business in their first 5 years. They made more money than Google and Yahoo in their first year of existence. I mean, this company is going to survive with or without Sean Ray. I put my anchor on this skincare product because of the numbers of people in our industry that I see can directly benefit from that. And that comes from a place, Skip, not a financial opportunity. It comes from a place where I can help.
Right.
And these people will realize when they hear about the product and use the product through Sean Ray, they'll remember who they heard it from. They'll remember who helped bring it to the market. They'll remember why. I mean, we never had a skincare product that could help. You know, the tanning company's putting on these alcohol-based topical dyes into your skin. It takes 2-3 weeks to get out, and you're scrubbing it, and you're soaking it, and you're laying in the sun, and the sun, you're just you're making yourself actually look older when you come out than when you come in.
This helps
slow that process down and turn back the hands of time. And who doesn't want that in this industry? This, for me, is a godsend because I've been able to help other people out there not only just make money, but also look young. I mean, that's reward. That's the reward I wanted from the moment that they told me this product was here.
Right. Those people out there who have those disempowering beliefs or they're have these challenges. I mean, you can make it and or doing what you love to do. You know, it can blend beautifully if you keep your mind open to that. And Sean, I'll help you do that when you go to SeanRayskincare.com and fill out that application. I'll get you to Sean and talk to you about it. You know, talking about business, I want to, before I let you go, I mean, one thing I respect about you in addition to the business is you're a family man. You're all about the family. When that turned on for you, man, you were all in. And I love the picture. What's that?
Well, I mean, when there's that void that you're trying to fill and you don't know what was missing, and suddenly it just, you know, like the dam breaks.
Right.
And those feelings that were suppressed, that were missing, that you didn't have because it didn't exist, it comes in and it's filled. I mean, your cup runs over.
Yeah.
And it takes me to a time and a place where I used to run behind my dad's janitorial truck just to be with him, where I would hide in the truck before he left the house because I knew he wasn't going to take me to work with him and he was going to leave. And I don't know when he's coming home. So I would hide in his truck before he came outside so that when we got to where we were going, he was stuck with me. Well, my dad's no longer with us. It'll be 5 years, July the 27th. But how awesome is it for me now to have that
yeah.
coming to me through my kids.
Right.
I wouldn't trade it for the world. Like my kids, you know, when I go to the airport, and which is quite often, and my kids start crying,
yeah.
it takes me back to where I was. But you know what? My dad did what he had to do to provide for the life I was living, and I'm now doing what my dad did
right.
to provide for the life that they're living. It's a real crazy circle of life
yeah.
that, you know, I'm fully embracing.
Yeah.
Fully
yeah. Embracing. No, I watch on social media. I can definitely identify if you see me, I'm in the same spot myself. Uh-huh. I mean,
which is even more rewarding.
Oh, yeah.
To see friends experience what you experience. It's like, oh, now he knows. Now
yeah.
He knows.
Right.
There
so
he is.
Yeah, I can't help it. I got to put this picture of my son and my daughter up.
Right.
Oh, Sean will understand. Nobody else will, but Sean will understand. Right.
Yeah. It's crazy because, you know, you wind up, instead of sending pictures of how big your arms are, you're sending pictures
oh, yeah.
of how big your kid is.
Yeah. And yes. did you ever think it would be this way, that it's just – it's why you do everything. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I didn't see that. I didn't see that because I watched my older sister who got married at 18 and started a family at 18, and my older brother who's 14 months older got married at 23 and started his family. When I was 23, I was standing on stage at my first Olympia.
Uh-huh.
When I was 18, I was training with Chris Dickerson trying to get in the magazine. So I waited till I was 40 to have a kid. And so I couldn't really understand what it all would ultimately feel like or even look like for me because I was on an isolated journey in the bodybuilding gym. I didn't even have time to have a girlfriend, really,
uh-huh.
to go through that whole emotional feeling of loving. I didn't even really appreciate that because I was trying to be Mr. Olympia and I didn't want to share
right.
that. I was in love with bodybuilding. But now, yeah, I mean, at the advanced age of 40, being able to have these emotions, and not only that, but have the time. My sister didn't have the time when she had her kid at 18. My brother didn't have the time when he was 23. They were working. They were
yeah.
hustling.
Yeah.
I have the time to soak it in. I can go I can go roller skating. I can go horseback riding. I can go swimming. I can watch my daughters grow. And for me, that's probably the bigger blessing. So when people say it's too late or why did I wait so long, I think God gives us things at certain times in our lives to fill things that we're missing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, these kids came to me at a time where I wasn't bodybuilding, at a time where I was going into transition, at a time where I could make time and to love and to feel and to share.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
I was bodybuilding, I wouldn't have had it. I wouldn't have been able to appreciate it. So thank God I'm healthy enough to enjoy it now.
Right, right. You know, talking about business and your little girl, Asia Monet, is a star, and she's going to be a lot bigger than Sean Ray ever was, right?
Well, I think she already is.
Yeah.
She's got 700,000 people on Instagram alone, and she's like 9. So she's, you know, had 3 reality shows in a row that she was on, including one that bore her name, Raising Asia. She's just now filmed, or in the process of filming, O.J. Simpson of California as O.J.'s daughter, working with Cuba Gooding Jr., who's O.J. Simpson, and John Travolta,
wow.
who's playing Robert Shapiro. I mean, she doesn't know who these people are, but we could appreciate
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know
and,
that.
And, you know, she has a music video from the holidays that went out in November that has over 2.5 million views, and it hasn't even been 8-9 months.
Yeah.
Asia is doing Asia, and luckily I'm that kind of guy, like my dad. We gave her wings to fly, so I'm not trying to clip those wings. Her mom is trying to nurture that experience. She has to have that hand of guidance on her, while the delicate balance of watching my 7-year-old being able to walk her to school,
yeah,
public school,
yeah.
being able to take her to gymnastics, keep her as normal and grounded
right.
as possible. We actually overcompensate
yeah,
for her because
yeah.
she doesn't have the limelight shine on her. But you know, it's funny if you saw the other side, when you watch Bella eating her Fruit Loops or her ice cream
right, right.
Or riding horses. I mean, you have Asia over here watching in like, you know, there's that depriving side because she has to go and do her dance.
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
got to go do her vocal lessons. So, and then, you know, Bella watching Asia being photographed, she's, you know, you feel her squeeze you around the neck a little bit.
Yeah.
She's watching
yeah.
her sister be a celebrity. It's a very interesting dynamic of balance that we
yeah.
have got to maneuver, that there's no jealousy, there's support, and there's equality in their relationship. Very
yeah.
two very different kids. Bella's shy, Asia's outgoing. But I can tell you, we all rally around what Asia's doing because she does have the torch and she does have the desire, like I did as a bodybuilder, to put it all out there. And we're her number one supporters.
Yeah. Yeah. It just sounds like a delicate balance of love and attention. And I bet there's sometimes you're the most proudest dad in the world. And then, you know, the fear of if they're hurt or rejected, you must just go through a myriad of emotions as a dad.
Well, there's a lot to juggle. And I got to tell you, the foundation of my strength in bodybuilding and my faith are the only two things that get me through not worrying. Because, you know, even the Bible says worrying is not going to add another day to your life. I know every time I get on an airplane, it could be my last. When I get on an airplane, I constantly remind myself of the wonderful life I've had and the opportunity I've been able to give. But what will they say when I'm gone? Are my kids in a place where if I'm gone, do they have the strong seed to survive? You know, Kevin Levrone lost his parents when he was a teenager, both of them at different times. A long life is not necessarily a better life. Through the passing of my father, my grandmother, and all the funerals I've gone through and all the bodybuilders we lost, Matt Duvall, Art Atwood, Greg Kovacs, Nasser El-Sambadi, Mike Matarazzo, Joe Weider, John Kemper, none of them have been lost on me. I'm a reporter. You know, I talk about their passing, and I think about when Sean Ray's gone, what will be said? What did I do? What kind of impact did I leave? Well, the one thing that they're not going to say is that I wasn't a hard worker. And through the social media age that we're living in now, one thing they're not going to say is that I wasn't a doting, loving father.
Yeah, all right,
the
right.
Proof
good.
Is in the pudding. When you want to know something about someone, Google their name, right? Because that's kind of the age that we live in. Go back and look at their Facebook page. Go back and look at their Instagram. You know, you want to know something about someone, look at what they do when the light's not being shined on them. I am blessed beyond measure. I'll be 50 years old this September the 9th. If it ended tomorrow, for example, for me, I would have no regrets. I wouldn't want to be here one day longer. I know I have people on the other side waiting for me. Yeah. You know, my dad's waiting for me. My sister lost a child to SIDS when she was 6 months old. Baby Ashley is over there. I have lived a long life. I don't want this to sound like a eulogy, but I'm also a historian buff. I want to see and talk to Martin Luther King Jr. I want to meet Nelson Mandela. There are people this year alone that will leave this planet Earth. I mean, it's as beautiful as it is, but they're going to be going into paradise where there's even more. I mean, Michael Jackson, I mean, Whitney Houston, there's personalities that I know are over there that I want to explore and know more about that I can't get here, that, you know, some of those lives ended too soon. And again, our days are numbered at birth. And I don't do anything, Skip, to necessarily prolong my life. I don't necessarily dream of my 90s. I live every day like it's my last. I know when my kids walk out of the house that when they come back, it's not a guaranteed thing. So my view on life, as fragile as it is with all the deaths that we've had, is this. Joe Weider provided an opportunity for me to live the life that I'm living now. My dad gave me the tools to be the person that I am right now. My faith has given me the balance to manage and maneuver all of these dynamics I have with the business, with the family, with the kids, and with all the obligations, and also the fact that I'm a public figure whether I like it or not. I'm a role model whether I like it or not, but I embrace all of that stuff, and it's brought me to where I'm at right now. So love me or hate me, like me, either way, I am very solid in the fact that I know who Sean Ray is. I walk to the beat of my own drum. I did it my way. And having that sense of balance and control has definitely allowed me to use my pedestal, my platform, to motivate and stimulate people in ways that I never thought I could when I was that 17-year-old kid in high school before I met Chris Dickerson, when I stepped out on that open men's bodybuilding show I was never supposed to be at, but I stepped outside my comfort zone and it opened the door to everything that I've gotten. I mean, I've had Lamborghinis, I've had a condo at the beach, I've seen the world four or five times over, had a few girlfriends here and there. There's nothing that I want for. Money comes and goes. The one gift that I got that stays with me, obviously, are my kids and my family. And if there's anything that I can share with all the people out there, if you find an opportunity to give back, do it. So my next 50 years, Skip, of being the foundation I'm laying for myself, is to find ways to give back and to share, because it will come back to me. It's already been given to me. So the only thing I can do is give back and share, not just with my family, but with people that help pave the way. That's why we're recognizing Lee Haney and Rich Gaspari. That's why we pay homage to people like Joe Weider, and we respect people like Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is what I think the cycle of life is about. I mean, Steve Blechman giving me the opportunity to stay relevant. You got to respect people like that. So all I can do now is let these younger guys out there, the Dallas McCarvers and Justin Comptons, know I'm available. My phone number is available. Whatever resources that they have to reach out to the past, which would be me now, I'm in the past. I will give them whatever tools they need to be the best that they can be for the next 50 years of their life. And that's what I'm here to do, is to serve and help and motivate.
I tell you, hey, it was an awesome time. I mean, really, really enjoy this podcast. I mean, you're definitely, you know, at a place of comfort, you know, the accomplishments in the past, the accomplishments at the present time, the, you know, the great social media life that you live, traveling around the world, all that's great. It's the kids and that sense of just self that you have that's so inspiring. So for Sean Ray, I am Skip LaCour. Thank you for listening to this bodybuilding and training podcast. Train hard and think big.
You're listening to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. Are you interested in one-on-one coaching with Skip LaCour, but you aren't quite sure it's a good fit for you? That's totally understandable. Unless you've had one-on-one coaching in the past or have talked to someone in depth who's had a great experience with coaching, it can be a real challenge to appreciate its full power and recognize the positive impact it will have on your life. You can get all of your questions about coaching answered by talking to Skip LaCour directly on the phone. Schedule a free 15-minute personal phone call and talk to Skip LaCour directly about your current situation, the goals you want to achieve, and the challenges you believe are standing in your way. Skip works exclusively with men who are the most committed to their success. He'll gladly take the time to explain all of the benefits of his one-on-one coaching programs and determine if the two of you would be a good match moving forward into such a close, consistent, and intense working relationship. Schedule your free 15-minute personal phone call and talk to Skip LaCour about one-on-one coaching right now by going to www.skiplacourcoaching.com/talk. Once again, that website address to schedule your free 15-minute personal phone call and talk to Skip LaCour about one-on-one coaching is www.skiplacourcoaching.com/talk.